Father Gerard McGinnity was being talked about as a future bishop. By 26, he was junior dean at Ireland's National Seminary in Maynooth. At just 31, he was senior dean, decades younger than his predecessors. He had recently finished a PhD and was being invited to give retreats abroad. He was appearing in the media regularly and was working on a book. Life could hardly have been better for the young priest. But in the early days of 1984, Gerard McGinnity had a choice to make.
Well, I have no difficulty remembering the scene because the room of the senior dean was a spacious room. In fact, it was beautifully appointed, and it was underneath the beautiful bay window of that Gothic building which faces up the long tree-lined park of Maynooth. And I remember the students coming in. They were silent, they were nervous. I was apprehensive myself. I just didn't know what more to expect than what I had been hearing. It was evening time, and there they sat, and they were waiting for who would break the ice and begin. And from individual remarks and comments from two who had come before, I had a certain awareness of what they were worried about. I listened, and you know, it moved from one to the other. Each one, you know, had their piece to say. Some had more to say than others. And what I was hearing was that they were picking up from students worrying remarks about Monsignor Ledwith. Monsignor Ledwith was at that time not just professor, but he was vice president. And they were actually beginning to have jokes among themselves about how he would select unsuspecting junior students and visit them for no professional reason, no justified reason. He wasn't their professor. He had no professional contact or relationship with them. And he would befriend the junior students in this way. He would go along and try to get to know them. He would visit them in their rooms. And the culture in Maynooth at the time still was, and the regulation was, that a person's room was a private area, and the staff didn't intrude there. But Monsignor Ledwith was taking this liberty, and they were beginning, you know, to joke like, oh, you'll have a visit tonight, or you might, you know. And senior students who came to me were concerned. They were saying that he was then inviting students to go to a house he owned. Also, the students were kind of amazed that at his hobbies, because they were lavish hobbies. For example, he would go flying, and sometimes he would take a student with him in a small plane, and maybe fly from Dublin down the country to where this house was. But I also came to realise, as the meeting went on, that they were concerned not just at how they would express the situation, which embarrassed them and frightened them, but they were nervous, maybe because of how I might react, that I might maybe get annoyed that they were talking like this about a member of staff. And I discovered at that meeting that some of them had actually had that precise reaction from their respective bishops. They had tried to get through with their concerns to their own bishops, and one bishop, I was told, actually said, oh, go back and say your prayers, and don't be talking like that. And they were met with just a wall of incredulity. my head began to spin, because I knew in my heart I had to take account of this. I had to act. At the same time, I remember feeling that I could be destroyed by this, that I would be stepping out to protect them, but it could be the end of me in terms of where I stood and my position in the Irish Church and in Maynooth. And I fought with that, and I kept it in my head, trying to... I was disturbed by it to the degree that, I mean, I just had to pray. And it was then that I resolved to go to the two primates at the time, and I spoke also to a third bishop, that was Bishop Kevin McNamara. And what occurred then was that, I mean, they again met it with incredulity, really, but had to listen because I was the senior dean, and I explained I was receiving these reports and concerns, and I felt in conscience that they were the people responsible and that they should know confidentially. But I expressed them merely as concerns. Never at any time did a student say they were physically abused or sexually abused by him, and I made that very clear. But the saving factor for me was that I knew my own Archbishop, Cardinal O'Fee, who had previously been a colleague with me in Maynooth, and we were both from the same diocese, and I knew him really well. And I spoke to him. He was terribly shocked, of course. He started to sigh, draw deep breaths, and he did just... Part of him, I think, was struggling to hope that it wasn't true, and that somehow maybe it just would go away.
Coincidentally, at about the same time, Father McGinnity received a routine questionnaire from the Papal Nuncio, the Pope's representative in Ireland, canvassing his views on the suitability of Monsignor Ledwith for appointment as bishop. Knowing such questionnaires to be beneath pontifical secret or strictly confidential, McGinnity mentioned the concerns he had heard. He expected to hear no more about it, least of all from the formidable Bishop of Galway, Eamon Casey, a trustee at the college.
One fine day when we were in the middle of an administrative council meeting at the time, I remember it well, which always took place at that time in Riverstown Lodge, lovely old building there as well, and you would never be interrupted at that meeting. The students were all in class at the time and so on, and there was an interruption, and I was asked to go to the door, and the secretary, the president's secretary in the adjoining office, said, Bishop Casey wants to meet you now. And so I left the meeting, and I can still visualise the scene, because in a way it was a frightening moment in my life, a horror moment really, and I remember it well. We were standing by a window, and I was facing to the light, but he I could see every expression on his face, and his face was, you know, alive and moving and shaking, vibrating with all of this. And he came straight to the point and said, you've been talking to bishops about a member of staff. And he said, passing on very serious remarks about that member of staff. I mean, Micheál Ledwith. And you have gone to the nuncio about him. I said, I have spoken confidentially, I said, about concerns. And He said, do you realize how serious these comments are? And I said, I do. That's why I made them. Oh, but he said that could destroy a man's reputation. And then he said, can you bring me here and now a student who has been the victim of these approaches by Michal Ledwith? And I nearly dropped dead. I mean, there I was, standing with him, and I thought to myself, the students are in class, how am I going to get a student right now on the spot, out of the blue? And I said, but that's unreasonable, I can't, it's not possible now, but I passed on to you what the students are saying. And he was very eager to put me in my place about all of this, and to let me know that I was really the problem. I mean, if these students weren't taken so seriously, we wouldn't be having this problem. And he said, I have undertaken to look into this matter. But I felt a certain doom descend upon me at that moment. At that stage, I felt, I'm a goner here, really. I'd say it was the hardest time in my life. I just really felt, I don't know where I stand now. I knew after the Bishop Casey intervention that I was probably going to lose everything because of his attitude. Well, the next thing that happened was that Cardinal Uffi, on an occasion when he was in Maynooth College for a meeting, asked me to take a stroll, and we walked along the glade at the back of the college. It was during that, after chatting for a little bit about the diocese at home or whatever, and he said, Jerry, you'd be over 7 years here now, you'd be do a sabbatical, you know, and did you ever think of that? And give you plenty of time to write and read and travel if you want, you know, whatever. And he made it very attractive, you see, and he threw it over to me like that. And I said, well, he said, it would be great, he said. And I said, well, yeah, I know I've been here, all right. But he said, now would be a good time to take it, and I would have no problem getting that through with the trustees. And the next thing then I heard from him was that I was being granted a sabbatical. It was as if it was bestowed, it was a gift, but I was still waiting to know what was really happening with the bishops, and no one was telling me. And I remember going home that summer, and at that stage it was crystallizing for me that there was definitely a concerted move to oust me and to block me. And when I began the sabbatical, I was hearing from some staff members who would drop a line, you know, and write that there were rumours then starting to circulate in Maynooth, McGinnity won't be back here.
Unnerved, McGinnity tried to settle into life in Rome, where he was completing work on his new book. Back in Maynooth, the students' concerns remained uninvestigated. Rather, in March 1985, the college trustees promoted Dr. Ledwith to college president. Towards the end of the year, McGinnity prepared to return to Maynooth. Unknown to him, though, his fate had been settled at a meeting a year earlier, just minutes after his confrontation with Bishop Casey.
The next thing, Cardinal Uffi landed out to Rome. He was attending maybe some meeting, but it seemed more important to him that he would meet me. And that particular evening, I wasn't there when he wanted me. And I remember getting this very serious message when I came in. Cardinal Uffi wants you to contact him, no matter how late it is. So I went over to the rooms in front of the Irish College, the wing where, you know, the bishops would stay, and his suite was there. And I remember, though it was late and I was a bit reticent, as soon as I knocked the door, "Come in!" And I went in, and there he was. I can still see him sitting up in the bed, and they had these marbly floors because of the heat, and brown furniture, I remember, shiny furniture. There was a locker by his bed, and he had his pipe there, and he used to smoke, especially if there was tension or stress or pressure. It had gone on late. He had gone to bed. He was sitting up in the bed, and he seemed so relieved that I was there, that I had come. And he started to just a little bit of small talk, and how it was going and how I was enjoying the setup in Rome and so on. And then he said, "Jerry," because we were on first name terms, you know, he said, "Jerry, you know, the bishops are gunning for you." And I said, "Why, what do you mean?" "Oh," he said, "it was about that report you made about Micheál Ledwith, you know." And he said, in fact, I'm under pressure from a number of bishops to get you to resign." And he said, I sat down on the bottom of the bed. I was so taken aback. And I said, "But I'm only on sabbatical. I was looking forward to going back to Maynooth. That's why I had the sabbatical." And he said, "There's no way that I can stand over you going back to Maynooth. In fact, they have come back to me a number of times. Have I not got your resignation?" And he said, "That's what I'm here for." Well, I just went faint. I really. And I could hardly get my breath. And because everything in my life that I enjoyed and was so fulfilling, so rewarding to me, and wound in with it my reputation, my credibility, my all the people who knew me far and wide. I had to stomach this all. It just stunned me, like I was struck by some kind of a meteor or something, meteorite. And I said, "Resignation? What?" I said, "Can I not even go back and do another year or two?" He said, "No, Jerry, I'd ask you, please do me this favor. Just resign and give me the resignation. And if you do, I promise you, there'll be no minute in the record of the trustees that you were asked to resign. Nothing that would interfere with your future career." And I said, "I have nothing to write. What would I write?" "Oh, anything at all." I remember he got a scrap of paper somewhere in the room, and he said, just write it there that I wish to resign my position as senior dean in Maynooth, and put the date on it." And he was so relieved. He clutched it when I wrote it. I'll never forget. And I was about to burst into tears. I was holding myself back. The pressure inside, I can't describe. And I was just in blackness and in darkness within myself. I felt, "I'm destroyed. I'm destroyed." Because I knew if I didn't go back to Maynooth after what I heard was circulating, that the impression would go out I had committed a crime, or I had violated some statute or whatever, because strictly speaking, according to the new statutes, you can't be removed from office unless there is some grave cause.
At the end of his sabbatical year, McGinnity had to return to the diocese as a curate. He was appointed to a secondary school in Armagh, where his responsibilities included waking students in the morning, ensuring discipline, and inspecting students' dormitories. It was all a very long way from the lofty heights of Maynooth, and his reputation was to suffer further.
I was shocked to discover that even after I had left Maynooth and I was back in the diocese, that there were rumours put about that under the stress of Maynooth that I had to be relieved of the position, that it was too much, and almost implying that I had some kind of nervous breakdown as a result, which I never had, and thank God my health has always been robust. It was a dirty tricks campaign, and the Irish Times asked, you know, to put pay to all of that and to reveal the deviousness involved in it. Would I not put out a statement from my doctors, which I did, and it was published.
Following the Episcopal Conference summer meeting this year, a senior church figure repeated to the Irish Times that Father McGinnity had had a nervous breakdown in 1984 and that this was why he was sent on sabbatical that year and removed from his post as senior dean at the college in 1985. At the request of the Irish Times, Father McGinnity secured a letter yesterday from the County Armagh medical practice where he had been a patient since birth. According to his doctors, throughout his lifetime, there has been absolutely no record of psychological or mental problems where Father McGinnity is concerned.
To be driven to a position where one has to take such a stand and defend one's health when it was gratuitously attacked and assailed, it must have been the most humiliating thing I ever had to do in the midst of it all and in all my life.
While Father McGinnity was struggling to salvage his reputation, Dr. Ledwith was meanwhile being recommended to the Vatican as a candidate for the prestigious position of Archbishop of Dublin. That recommendation came from the same papal nuncio, Dr. Gaetano Alibrandi, who had received McGinnity's complaint just a couple of years earlier and who had breached its confidentiality. That appointment didn't proceed, but Dr. Ledwith remained as president of Maynooth for 10 years until his premature retirement in 1994. That retirement followed allegations of child sexual abuse against Dr. Ledwith, who agreed a financial settlement with his accuser without any admission of liability. A clause of confidentiality has meant that it has never been properly investigated, though Monsignor Ledwith strongly denies any wrongdoing. It took the bishops a further 8 years to acknowledge those circumstances of Ledwith's departure, but rumours had leaked out much earlier.
It had already percolated out, oh, Jerry McGinnity's vindicated. And I suppose it was small comfort, but it was something of a consolation that people could at least see that I tried to act in truth.
It took a further 8 years for events to really come to a head. By this stage, Monsignor Ledwith was based in Washington State and was teaching there at a New Age college, far removed from Catholic theology. Senior counsel George Birmingham and later Judge Frank Murphy were appointed by the Department of Health and Children to investigate the church's handling of allegations in the Diocese of Ferns. The Ferns report was published in October 2005.
To me, this was the enormous breakthrough. I felt so liberated. I felt upheld. They vindicated me and by the same token found wanting the bishops.
By any standard, the concerns as expressed by Father McGinnity were inadequately investigated. They also appear to have been wholly misunderstood. The inquiry views as entirely understandable Father McGinnity feeling that he was victimised as a result of the concerns of the seminarians which he expressed. Punitive actions of that nature could only deter bona fide complaints to church authorities, which should be valued as providing information for the control of those having access to young people.
The last sentence, to me, is vital. The readiness of anyone in any institution, be it a school or a hospital, it doesn't have to be clerical, to come forward in an effort to protect young people at risk is destroyed if they look on and see what the aftermath has been for me in relation to the Maynooth case. The trustees have not formally acknowledged what they did to me. They have condoned what was carried out by those who went before them. Why does the church stand by and refuse to make restorative justice for the incalculable damage, not just to a person's loss of position, denigration, humiliation, but also damage to such a degree of their reputation? If poor people acted in a way like that, people with no social standing, they would be treated as criminals. And yet, this state of affairs is allowed to linger with no redress.
In June 2005, Archbishop Sean Brady issued a statement of regret for any hurt felt by those involved. Monsignor Ledwith remained a priest until he was laicized in September 2005. He denies any allegations of abuse or harassment. Father McGinnity has been parish priest in Knockbridge, County Louth, for 7 years.